The term ecosystem is used quite frequently in the technology world, and for all intent and purposes, when we use ecosystem, we mean buy-in. We danced around the topic of ecosystem on the last two podcasts, episodes 45 and 46, specifically in terms of cloud. The concern being, if you sign up for one cloud provider now, you may be stuck there and unable to get out. But there have been so many technology ecosystems over the years, Windows versus Mac, Apple versus Android, and now Amazon versus Google versus Apple versus Microsoft, kind of. At the end of Sourcecast episode 46, I was talking about the differences between the new Apple and Microsoft computers, and it had me thinking about the old school ecosystems for consumer technology when I was a kid. So this week, we're going to go off topic a little bit, and I am going to talk about some home consumer products, some ecosystems that I've brought into my house, and the issues that may present in the future. So yeah, I'm opening up my house to you guys. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast episode 47. Before I spend the next 10 minutes talking about myself, let's review the acquisitions that have taken place over the last 8 days. The big news this week is that CenturyLink is buying Level 3 Communications for $25 billion. Level 3 actually has one of the largest internet backbones in the world, but has recently turned its attention to small and mid-sized business customers to reverse slowing sales trends. CenturyLink, on the other hand, was a rural phone company, and it's seeking to upgrade its networks with fiber optic lines to compete with AT&T and Verizon. Dare I say this is a situation where a merger actually makes sense? We'll see. IBM's still in that buying spree. They've purchased a personal shopper program from Fluid to build out Watson's conversation skills. The platform is called Expert Personal Shopper, and it was originally built by a company called Fluid, who was a strategic partner of IBM's in the past. For those of you that were hyped up by that Salesforce mergers and acquisitions document leak from a few weeks ago,
but I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
Tableau is not a target for Salesforce, according to Jim Cramer. This seems to make sense since Tableau hasn't been performing very well, although that would make them a good target for acquisition. It seems that Salesforce is not interested. Or maybe they are. For the last 46 episodes, this podcast is focused on managing and purchasing from large IT suppliers for corporate enterprise. I like to view my home as a small enterprise, and there's technologies and services that are needed to run my home efficiently, just like in corporate America and in my day job. I thought it would be fun to talk about home IT procurement and the technological services that we bring into the house. The first topic, which seems to be very popular with people when I tell them, is that I cut the TV service. We're officially one of those weird cord cutter people. Let me explain. I live in a portion of America, specifically in New Jersey, where there is absolutely no competition for internet providers. We do have some choices as far as television goes. You can sign up for Dish, but I'm not a big fan of having a Dish bolted to my roof. That's just me. It's a weirdness with me. So we've been stuck with Comcast since we purchased our house. And I'm not one of those people that bemoan how terrible Comcast service is. For the most part, they've worked fine. They were responsive when we had issues in the house. This will probably sound familiar to most of you. When we bought our house, we signed up for their triple play package, which is the phone, the cable, and the internet, and it was $100. Close to 10 years later, my bill was over $220 a month. And I wasn't really getting anything extra than when I did initially. In fact, it may have been less. And like most people, you call the cable company, you can negotiate your prices down, you can get a better price. And that worked for almost 10 years. And then it didn't. And thanks to this podcast, I don't really watch that much television. I assumed that my wife did, but we started to talk about it. And I'm like, do you really watch a lot of television? When I'm downstairs doing weird podcast things, are you up there watching Project Runway? And yes, she does watch Project Runway, but that's really it. And our son, who's now almost 5, never really watched live television. It was always things on Netflix or Amazon Prime. So nobody was really watching television in the house. The dedicated phone line that we had running into the house, nobody ever called. Everybody called our cell phones, and I was just getting telemarketing calls, which drove me crazy. So I looked into canceling it. And this isn't something that I did on a whim. I researched it. So if you're interested in cutting the cord, here are a couple of things you have to know. If you really want to save money, you have to get rid of all of the cable company's equipment in your home. This means your router. This means the cable boxes, obviously. This means your cable modem. So I had to research those other additional pieces of equipment to bring into the home, and then also a medium to watch television on without the cable boxes. So very quickly, I bought an Aris cable modem. It was less than $100. So within a year, that'll pay for itself because Comcast charges $10 a month for the modem. I had additional routers in the house already because the cable modem needs a router to connect to. To replace the cable boxes, I put Rokus on every television. The reason I chose Roku is because they're relatively agnostic from a platform perspective, going back to the ecosystem. They support Amazon, they support your Netflix, they have Hulu, you can get your Google stuff. The only thing that they really don't support is Apple TV, but there's no getting around that. You're either in for Apple or you're not, and this household is decidedly not Apple. In one bedroom, I did get a Fire TV box from Amazon because I just wanted to try it out. The problem with that is obviously they don't play well with Google, but it is a very nice device. I like the voice commands. From a phone perspective, I could have completely eliminated the phone. We use our cell phones most of the time. But honestly, I do prefer to talk on a cordless phone or like a handheld phone or a speaker phone. And it's nice to have multiple phones that are already in the house. It'd be nice if they rang as opposed to having to find where I left my cell phone. Note to anyone who actually knows me and listens, when I walk in the house, I put my phone on the dining room table and walk away. So it's never near me. I was going to purchase a device called an Ooma. They've been around for a while. They plug into your router and then it just makes the phone work as normal. But my friend turned me on to this little device called an Obihi. Same idea. It's this little teeny tiny puck of a device. It's smaller than a hockey puck. And I ended up actually Velcroing it underneath my desk. You don't even see it. But it ties into Google Voice. So again, ecosystem. I've been using Google Voice or Google Hangouts now for several years. I have an established number that most people call anyway. This thing ties into that Google account and it just makes every phone ring. The nice perk, which it wasn't even expected, you don't even have to pay taxes, which you would with the Ooma, which would only be a few dollars a month. So there it is. There's your television and your phone service. So I went from paying over $220 a month to paying $87 a month to Comcast. And I do pay for a higher internet connection speed. Now you're probably saying, well, where are you getting your content from? Prior to cutting Comcast, we already subscribed to Netflix. We already subscribed to Amazon, but really more for the shipping, not really for the streaming services. But that has proven to be a good investment because a lot of the older content that used to be on Netflix is actually on Amazon now. Good for kids who like to watch cartoons. I was paying for Hulu, and the reason that I pay for Hulu is because Comcast charged $10 extra for a device, like a cable box, for every room. We have guest rooms, and if a guest wanted to watch television, I had a television set up in the room. I didn't really want to pay for a cable box every month, and I wasn't using it. So I signed up for Hulu, because at least they can watch current TV shows. The last piece, for those of you who like to watch sports and miss live television, we also signed up for Sling TV, which is a live streaming service, and you get about 25 or 30 channels, like CNN, Cartoon Network, Cooking, HGTV, History, Vice. Most of the channels that we watched already was on there, and that was $20 a month. So even with all of the streaming services, I still shaved $100 a month off of my monthly, we'll call it media bill. But again, the point is, you're signing up for an ecosystem with these devices that you bring into the house. And in some cases, you may or may not be limited to the kind of things you can access. Around the same time that I canceled my cable service, I invested in the Philips Hue light bulb system. And you can make fun of me because this is actually pathetic. For the last few years, my wife and I have been using these remote switches for the lamps in our bedrooms. So we could shut them off at night. You don't have to reach over and knock something over. But the lamps were on the same frequency, so she would shut her light off, mine would go on, or vice versa. This Philips Hue system, you can control it with your phone, it's precise, lovely. You could turn it on when you're on vacation, so it makes it look like you're in the house. So I bought it, and I was super happy, because you can dim the lights, you do all these cool things. But then I realized, a light switch, a simple device that's been in homes for years, this practical light switch, is effectively irrelevant with the smart lighting system. And every time I wanted a light to turn on in my house, I had to whip my phone out, open the app, find the specific light that I wanted to control, turn it on, and you'd have to like swipe it over to get it to 100%. So you have this analog solution, a light switch that works great. And here we go, overly complicating everything to turn on a light. But I'm not one to be discouraged. Enter the Amazon Echo, a device that me and my coworker actively mocked when it was announced. I purchased one. Who would use such a thing? Why would you bring this thing into your house? Well, I brought it into my house so I can turn my lights on and off. And you know what? It's cool. And thanks to Amazon introducing the much cheaper Dot, there is an Echo on every floor. And there are smart light bulbs on every floor. And when I walk into my house, I could just be like, yo, turn the lights on, and the lights turn on. And I can dim them in areas where I couldn't dim them. And it makes me feel very fancy and full of future technology. And then Google announced that they're coming up with a competitor. And it works so well with the Chromecast and your Nest, which is their thermometer, although the Echo does work with that too. And their advanced speech recognition patterns will work so much better. And obviously these two systems do not integrate well with each other, with the exception of the Nest. You can't even watch Amazon streaming on a Chromecast, and it's a little bit kludgy to get YouTube and Google Movies on the Amazon platform. And if you would like to voice command your television, which is something that I am actually very interested in, Amazon doesn't really have that technology yet, but it seems like the Google platform will let you do that. So yeah, ecosystems. As we bring these technologies into our homes, these smart light bulbs, your alarm system, your thermostat, your cameras, consumers have to be really aware of whether or not these things are going to integrate with each other, or if you want them to integrate with each other, because you might be in a situation where you invested money in a technology, and then you bring something else into the house, and the two things don't talk. And you may say, boo-hoo-hoo, go back to your analog solutions, use light switches. Fair enough. But for those of you that are enthusiasts of technology, it would be nice if these things actually worked with each other. I'm sure plenty of you out there who are users of Apple phones or Android phones would get frustrated when an app for one platform, like let's say the iPhone, the app isn't available on Android or vice versa. Although it's never vice versa. It seems like it's always designed for iPhones first. And again, from an ecosystem and platform perspective, for those of you that buy smartphones, Apple's pretty set with their ecosystem. Their devices are carefully curated. But on the Android side, especially what happened with Samsung, because their phones are blowing up, there are other makers in the market now that are introducing slightly split or forked versions of Android. A great example of that is OnePlus. They make really nice devices, but it's a slightly augmented version of the operating system. So updates are not consistent, and it's under their skin and under their control. So you don't have a clear, consistent user experience, even with a certain ecosystem. So right now, my household is in a multiple split ecosystem. We use Windows machines and Chromebooks. We use Amazon Echo smart assistants. We use Roku and Amazon devices on our televisions. We pay for Google Music services, which doesn't play nice on the Amazon platforms. And it's all kind of a mess. And luckily, there's a guy who has some IT background to make this stuff all work. But you could see from a corporate perspective how these things can get so confusing and why so much extra labor and extra software and extra hardware has to be purchased to make all of these things work, especially if there's a previous buying history and a commitment to other platforms. You have to make all of this stuff integrate. And it's costly, and it's expensive, and it's time-consuming, and it's incredibly frustrating. But it's really fun. And that's all we have for this week. As a reminder, you can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mantua, New Jersey, and is produced and recorded by me. Music is provided by Google. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.